Hi there, Omace, and welcome back to another episode of the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast, a 4th edition Shadowrun actual play. GM'd by myself, Paul, and played by Veronica as Cecile, aka College Girl, Kat as Deandra, Val as Ollie, aka Boxer, Beth as Grace, aka Nightingale, and Dex as Grim the Rigger. This is episode 19 of season 2. The team meets up with Kirsten to collect their Nuyen. They have some words with Prokop before going their own ways. Back in Terraslaw, Deandra, Ollie, and Grace talk and form plans. Cecile goes shopping and does some cloak and dagger attempts at shaking any tales she might have. Before I cut you loose on the episode, please listen to this trailer from a new show called Omes of Magic and Technology.
Hello there. Are you interested in magic? Or cyberpunk? Or maybe both? Well, in that case, I have a story to tell you. A story set in Manhattan of the 2080s. Oh My of Magic and Electronics is a Shadowrun 6th edition actual play featuring a group of Shadowrunners trying their best to make money with a few questionable jobs. An interesting cast of people who try to make enough money to live a good life in the shadows of Manhattan. And perhaps one day they even manage to finish the one big job that will give them enough money and the opportunity to reach their own personal goals. But the road is long and hard, so who knows if they will actually make it, if they actually survive long enough. If you want to know more, you can find us on Twitch on my channel Super Duper Alexini, where we have a session every 2 weeks on Friday at 7:30 PM Central European Time. I hope to see you there. Until then, good luck, chummers. And goodbye.
We really need to stop talking about Craig behind his back.
This Hi,
is
Craig.
Hey, Craig, form. We love you.
So, where were we?
I don't know.
I believe, if I recall, I was on the floor of the van.
Yes.
I think most of us were on the floor of the van.
And so Grim was getting you out of there. And all right, so we're all in the van. And we'll just sort of fast forward. Let's do a quick recap, right? So most of what's going on here, like Dex and I were talking about this earlier today, we were sort of enjoying the fact that, like, literally the last two sessions where Dex has been involved have all taken place in the same night. So this is still the same. We might forget that because for us, obviously, time has passed, but in game, this is still the same night in which the bomb exploded at Hazel's. You guys were at the hospital. Cecile was at Deander's apartment. Grim came and got you. You guys went to the hospital, rescued the other people from the hospital, drove to the warehouse, met Kirsten, got this job, drove out to this farm, got the data that they had hired you for, that Kirsten had given you the job for. So all of this has happened in just one night. So it's all Dex's entire Grim's entire experience with the team right now is simply all of that, which we thought was sort of funny because it was like Grim's sort of thinking, wondering about these people. Like, since he's been in touch with them, it's just been nonstop action.
Sadly, that's our life. Nonstop action.
Well, I was telling him it's actually not. You'd be surprised how much time they spend in coffee shops and getting donuts.
Look, camping. Look.
Oh, and camping and discussing radical political ideas from the fifth world.
Listen. I don't want to remember how long it took us for Cecile to get a bank account.
Fucking Grim is over there like, goddamn, this Shadowrun thing, I don't know if I'm cut out for it.
You were in the van. The van was leaving. Grim had let you know that there was a aircraft incoming, probably a VTOL, and shortly afterwards, there was a bright flash on the horizon in the direction of the house, of the farmhouse. And that was where we left off last time. So now the van is pulling back into the warehouse in Tacoma, where Kirsten had basically gathered you all up. This is, one other thing that happened in the recap that I forgot to mention was also, this is the same night that Cecile handed off a certain bit of pay data to Mary Luce.
Did I?
Yep, this is all still the same night, because it was actually Kirsten who came and picked up Cecile from Boxer's apartment.
Uh-huh.
Took her to the warehouse. While they were there, Mary Luce showed up, and then the rest of the team showed up.
Yeah, but wasn't that conversation with Mary Luce just like a...
That was the conversation where she got the pay data from you, and she told you that she was going to work on getting you reinstated once they were rid of Kirill Petrov. And she also said that she might have use of your special talents in the future, which caused some enormous anxiety on Cecile's part.
The entire situation caused anxiety.
Mary Luce said that she might find more value in having Cecile as a deniable asset than at the research facility at Washington University.
Okay.
Extending her ownership over Cecile.
Ownership is such a strong word. It's just an asymmetric business partnership.
Mm-hmm. That's, you know, you can phrase it any way you like. She's your patron.
Sure, I like that one.
You are now pulling back into the warehouse. Kirsten is there. She's leaning against her bike and idly looking at her comlink as you guys drive in and take it from there.
I think probably about halfway through the ride back, Dander did legitimately just like start snoring like incredibly loudly. So she's probably still snoring. She hasn't changed positions.
Boxer just filtered out the snoring for ears.
Cecile's going to take off her face covering, but not change her hair back because reasons.
I'm going to have a word with her. She gives him that pat to Grace and gets out of the van. Walks over to...
Cecile unsteadily gets out of the van and starts walking into the warehouse.
Kirsten looks up from her comlink and puts it away. Her usual bright and friendly smile on her face. And she says, oh, good. You guys, that was a good time.
Good time?
I would rather disagree.
I don't mean good time as in an enjoyable time. I mean, you guys got it done very quickly.
And it's a good thing too, Kirsten, because whatever legwork you did, you missed something very, very big. Because that house was erased with an airstrike. There's something a little more than we were aware of there. And if we'd been a few minutes slower, we would be gone.
I can tell you that I personally didn't do any legwork at all.
In fact, I'm actually very curious, what was the rush here at all?
The rush was the airstrike.
Wait,
did you not feel it important to tell us that there were going to be bombs dropping on our head?
I don't know if there were bombs dropping on your head. I mean, we didn't know about the airstrike, but, I guess you have questions.
Oh, no, I have more than questions. What the hell are you planning to do with this file anyway?
Well, she looks at her comlink and she says, let's get one or two things straight. I really am just passing on the job to you. I don't actually know anything about this. I can tell you that ProCop gave me the information that I relayed to you and asked me to impart to you that there was a time limit on it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put him through to us all here. And let's just do a quick conference call. Are you guys okay with that? Because I certainly aren't going to be able to answer your questions, you know, very well.
Just put him on, Kirsten.
Yeah, just speakerphone. Maybe a holographic projector if she has one.
Indeed, there's still snoring.
Yeah. Someone go get the elf.
Where is she?
In the van.
Tres.
In the back?
Wake up the elf.
Nightingale goes to do that. And she, like, noses at Deandre at first. And then she just gives her a kick in the ribs.
I think Deandre, like, starts to wake up with a nose. And then the kick in the ribs just, like, turns her completely over. And then she's, like, in a solid second, she's on her feet, sword drawn, and hits her head on the roof of the van and, like, stumbles out.
Hi.
Hello.
All right, well, since we're all together now, I'm going to put ProCop on. He's ready, does something on her comlink, and there's an image of ProCop pops up, little holographic trid screen. You see ProCop, he's dressed in a very formal suit, like something that you would wear to a formal function, and he appears to be outside on a terrace overlooking downtown Seattle. You see the night sky behind him and lights and things, and he's smoking his usual cigarette, and he looks at you and says, "Ah, so good to see you again. I am glad that you were able to accomplish your mission successfully, I hear."
Successfully, despite what we were given going in.
Yes.
I think it got shot, so I think we're incredibly lucky.
It's not getting shot that I was worried about. Were you aware of the aerial response that was available? And if I understand Kirsten correctly, already scrambled, or at least on standby to be scrambled to our location? Because that is something we would very much like to know.
Yes, I was not aware. In fact, I believe your analysis of what occurred after you left is incorrect. There was no aerial strike on the location. And I certainly would not have put you there if I thought there was going to be an aerial bombardment.
Educate me then. I saw a plane, I saw an explosion.
Yes, well, I don't have all of the information yet. However, it appears that there was a strike team deployed, and the strike team detonated a breaching charge which set off a self-destruct sequence at the target.
Well, that's lovely. Is that why there was a time limit in the first place? There was a strike team already on its way?
The reason there was a time limit on the target was that we knew that... Well, let's back up a little bit. I think there is some misunderstanding of what we were attempting to achieve here. You see, the file which you have retrieved, you probably know, Cecile, is a blackmail / insurance file, which the target, which the owner had compiled to prevent Diana Petrov from eliminating him as a loose end. Since we had information that Diana Petrov was losing patience with the situation and felt confident in taking him out, she had discovered that he had the file only at that location. We knew that she was going to execute some kind of maneuver to retrieve the file. We did not know what shape or form that would take. The reason that we wanted the file is because we also are able to use it as an insurance policy to guarantee Kaylee's life. We do not want that file, the information on that file destroyed, and we do not want it made public. Once it becomes public, it is useless to us.
Well, that's good.
You see, Kaylee is not just a good friend of mine. She is almost like a daughter to me, and I do not want to see her hurt. And I know that If Diana Petrov discovers that her daughter is still alive, she will attempt to kill her. This is almost guaranteed. We can use the fact
that she has not done this already.
Diana Petrov is unaware of Kaylee's existence. She does not know that Kaylee is her daughter.
How can you be so certain?
Because we are, in some manner of speaking, able to intercept her conversations. This is how we knew that she was going to make a move to retrieve the file or destroy it. If she had retrieved the file, she would have discovered that Kaylee was alive. Then Kaylee's life would have been in danger. So as it is now, Diana Petrov does not know that Kaylee is her daughter and does not know that her daughter is alive. I would like to keep it that way. And this is why I was so surprised when Kaylee agreed to your scheme, Cecile. But that is her decision, and if she continues, would like to follow through on it, then so be it. It's not for me to tell her how to live her life.
Indeed.
The one thing that I would like to request of you, Cecile, is that you do not keep a copy of that file. Your history with data security is not stellar, and you do not have the resources at your disposal that I do.
It was never my intention to keep the file.
Good. Do not make a copy.
I give you my word that I have made no copy of this file.
Very well. I will trust you. So that is why there was a time limit on the mission. That is why we acted so hastily. I'm glad that you were not harmed. I am glad that things went well. I understand your concern about the mission. There was not enough time to collect as much information as we would have liked. Of course, this is the nature of the work that we do.
Yes, you're very lucky they were opposed.
Ah, yes. Well, there was never any doubt of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, did you have any other questions?
Is Kaylee okay?
Kaylee is well. She is conscious, and if you would like, you will be able to see her soon.
Good.
Oh, yes. There is one other thing that I would like to remind you of. A few days ago, I made a loan to some of you of some weapons. Eventually, I would like to have them returned to my armory.
Certainly. That bothers me none. Shall I leave them with Kirsten?
Kirsten looks up and says, oh, no, I'm not taking them on my bike. Sorry.
So be it. So be it.
Cecile and Boxer. Cecile picked up a Colt, and I think Boxer picked up a an Ares.
Boxer already. Grace is the only one.
I mean, if he wants to have a misconception.
Don't worry, Grace.
Either way, he's expecting to get back a Colt and an Ares Alpha.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Doesn't sound like he's looking for the stun sword to be returned by Diander.
Oh, the fucking course.
He's looking to get rid of it anyway.
That would be too mean. I didn't buy like a stun sword from him. I went and bought like a fencing saber, and I was planning on just beating people over the head with it.
Oh, that's right. He didn't actually have one. That's right. That's right. You actually did go to a fencing store.
It's a funny story. I'm pretty sure that Colt is actually in Grace's van. So
what happened to the van again? Where is it?
It's in one piece.
I think the van is still parked out around near Boxer's apartment.
Oh, no.
The van gets towed.
Well, it wouldn't be towed, but I would definitely believe the police would... While they do police things to it.
Very well, then. I shall return to my current duties and obligations if there are no further questions.
It's been a pleasure as always, Prokop.
He gives you a sardonic grin and sort of a slight salute and nod of the head as he signs off. Kirsten looks at you guys and she says, oh yeah, right. Cred sticks. Here you go.
And here is yours. Cecile hands over the, well, technically Diander's cred stick.
Cecile takes it, and then she gives you a look, and she says, you're not holding out on us, are you?
Look, that file doesn't belong to me. I looked it over. It's Kaylee's, as far as I'm concerned.
Okay. I'm not, I know Prokop genuinely cares about Kaylee. If harm came to her because of something that you hadn't passed on, I'm sure he would take that poorly.
Yeah, I would take it poorly too, Kirsten.
You know, Cecile is kind of mean, but I think she understands the gravity. Prokop just explained it, too.
No, Drek. Kaylee was blown up in a bar.
Well, the bar was blown up and we were like 7 meters.
Speak for yourself.
I wasn't even there.
I was standing there right next to her.
We're not exactly sure why they blew up Hazel's bar, but it would be interesting to find out if there is a link between what happened at the bar and Diana Petrov and her friend Piper Neves.
I bet it's a humanus op.
Piper, you said.
Piper's her girlfriend.
Probably some kind of hacker, too.
The Charles Lee, the decker at the house, the security consultant at the house, at the farmhouse. Him and Piper Neves and George Van Housen and all those guys, they're all ex-Shadow Riders, so I think it's all connected somehow.
And you're sure it's Piper Neves?
N-I-E-V-E-S, yes.
Kirsten looks at Cecile and then at Boxer and says, I think Cecile can tell you quite a bit more than I can, actually.
Cecile gives Kirsten a very annoyed look. And what exactly does that mean, Kirsten?
Means that to be efficient as a team, you have to trust and be honest with each other.
Indeed.
Any case, you guys have a good night. Oh, do you guys need a place to crash tonight?
I won't.
That would be appreciated, considering.
I need someone to water my plants.
I think she charges extra for that.
Yeah, I can go check on your apartment if you want. Actually, she looks at Cecile. She says, Cecile, if you want to come with me, I mean, there's no... Doesn't appear that anybody's looking for you. There's a bulletin out for Boxer and Diandere.
Sure, but I have to take care of something quickly. Cecile turns to Boxer and says, Tuna Breath, how much for your tag eraser?
I'm sorry?
Your tag eraser, how much?
Try to refer to slurs and then we'll talk.
Whatever.
Wait, Cecile, no, that's a learning experience right there.
I can just buy one.
If you're just gonna buy one, don't waste your creds. Like,
you have extra?
Digging around in her pockets.
Wait, isn't like, what? Nightingale just blinks.
330, 330, where tie racers are. Yeah, Dandera pulls a tie racer out of her pocket.
Am I paying you for this?
You live in my house and I don't expect you to pay rent, so why would I expect you to pay for a tiger racer?
Fair enough. She takes it. All right, Kirsten, wherever the hell you're going, I'll guess I'll go too. Awful timing. Awful, awful timing. Although I will also take that opportunity.
Deander gave a tag racer to Cecile and they left, I think.
Kirsten hands Cecile her helmet. Says, all right, let's get out of here. At this point, I think we'll say that Grimm has stepped out of the van and he looks at the rest of everybody and he says, well, I don't know about you guys, but I need to go get my drone repaired. So I'm going to take off.
Okay.
He says, as he starts to turn to leave, and he says, it was fun working with you guys. I hope you'll give me a call if you need a driver or drone support again.
Well, you'll probably hear from us soon.
We certainly consider it.
So Grimm takes off, and you guys had asked Kirsten for a place to stay, right?
Boxer and Grace did, at least. Boxer and Nightingale, I mean. Nobody respects her shadow's name.
What about Diandere? Where's Diandere going to go?
I think Deander was just going to go crash with you.
Terraslar?
Terraslar, yeah.
How are you going to get to Terraslar?
Oh, yeah. That's a good
You're
question.
In Tacoma, so you're not far. You know, you're maybe 20, 30 minutes. And you could probably grab a grid guide or a green cab or something like that. But most of them don't really like to go into Terraslar. And it being about 1:30 a.m., it might be tricky to get a ride out there.
Do I have a contact I can rig up? I can be very rude with.
Did you just ask if you had a contact you could be very rude with?
Yeah. I called him at like 1 a.m. in the morning. I could call Brown Dog again and be like, hey, Brown Dog, send someone on the way. I don't think Tinder would like calling Brown Dog twice in a day. The worst question is, how far is it to Terraslar walking?
So you're probably a 20 to 30 minute drive from Terraslar.
As long as you don't take a highway to Terraslar, it's like an hour to two.
Maybe, but you're going to be walking through Tacoma and potentially parts of Puyallup. So you're not going to, it's going to be a dangerous walk.
I guess Diandere will call a grid guide.
All right. Diandere calls a grid guide.
I think Diandere will like attempt to get out of the warehouse first. Like she's not going to call a grid guide straight to a safe house. She's going to like figure out where the nearest Stubberjack is and like call it to there and then walk there.
All right. Deander heads for a Stuffer Shack, Nightingale, and Boxer. Kirsten handed you guys a what looks like a cred stick. It's actually a key card for a coffin motel in the area.
Fuck. All right, Grace. I don't suppose you've ever slept in one of these.
It was not my proudest moments. Not one of
well,
them.
At least I'm not having to introduce you to it. God damn it. All right, let's get
I found it kind of spacious, honestly, and it was warm, unlike the street.
I'm glad you enjoy it. But, man.
Wait, just to be clear, a coffin motel is what I'm thinking it is, right? It's like a, it's like one of those pods.
It's like a little pod motel where you, it's just like a, like imagine the drawers in a mortuary, slightly bigger. So you open the door and you can crawl in.
Wait, it's really that small?
Yeah, you can't stand up in it.
Well, yeah, you can't stand up, but that's just like insanely small.
It's slightly bigger than that. There's probably a couple of data jacks, and there's probably a trid screen where you can feed Nuyen in to watch something that you shouldn't be watching, and, you know.
Oh, God, it's going to be disgusting in there.
This is Tacoma, so you're down by the dock, so it's probably a coffin motel that's frequented by the, you know, dock workers and sailors.
Mm-hmm. Let's do some urban camping.
Since you two aren't norms, you're probably welcome to come to Terrace Slar with me, but I don't know if you want to go to the elf slums.
They've been there with you before.
Yep.
Let's be better than being somewhere more high profile. Even a coffin hotel. I know my face is going to be all over the fucking news, even if it is in a tiny corner.
You should dye your fur and cut
I
your
already
hair.
Have dyed my fur. Well, you really think that to help? How many cat people do you see walking around? Don't answer that.
I saw another one a few weeks ago.
I wish I could markedly change my appearance.
Wait, does makeup not even work?
Can't you?
Hair dye doesn't work, unless you're looking at me through a camera. God, that's unfortunate.
That's fair enough. At least I can dye my fur as well as it is.
All right, you get a grid guide, and are your... Here's the thing, you can get a grid guide with a actual driver who you could potentially talk or bribe into taking you into Terrace Lar. Or you could get a robo-cab that will just take you to the border of Terrace Lar.
I don't think two wanted people should get an actual person.
Yeah, it'd be a robo-cab. And Deandra would still probably be wearing her rebreather the whole time.
Robo-cabs still are full of sensors and cameras.
Well, I could put a physical mask on Boxburg. I mean, Boxburg. Yes, your name shall now be Boxburg. They will not see it coming.
This is sufficient to disguise you.
like the disguise is like she's like a different kind of cat.
My disguise is I'm now using my real name, CN Calvi.
Yeah, I could put a physical mask on her on Boxmer, Boxbrain,
Boxlord, Boxman,
Boxlan.
We've been boxelated.
Would you like that, Boxbur?
Boxer's gonna box you in the face if you try it.
What? Do you want to be kidnapped by the police while we sleep? Do you want them to SWAT wherever we're gonna be staying?
Generally, cops don't go into Terrace Lar. It'd be ancients coming after us, and they'd be hired by the cops. And I don't think ancients are likely to do Humanus' dirty work for them.
That's fair. That's fair. Okay, so...
Just mask us up.
Nightingale just grabs her, like, own scarf and pulls it off. And she just wraps it around Boxer's face, not tightly. And...
Boxer's still wearing her rebreather, too.
Yeah, no, just over top of it.
Oh.
And she, like even, like, tucks her ears down, and then she gives her a pair of sunglasses. It's just, like, one of those cheap, gaudy sunglasses.
I assumed you were going to do some magic stuff. What are you going to do about this? She swings her tail around. I'm not stuffing it down there. I know exactly what you're thinking. No. Stick it up my shirt, God.
Okay, fine. I'll just cast physical mask on her and make her look like a human, a normal human. With
do
a
not
weird...
make her look like a human if we're going into Terrace Lar.
An elf, a normal elf. With a weird flesh tail, like a monkey, but without the fur.
Ugh, What does it feel like to touch a masked person?
So long as it actually conforms to the dimensions of the person, you would be able to feel it as, like, it would appear. So she would be able to feel her own tell, feel the exterior, and feel that it is, like, not fur.
Oh, holy shit. I haven't felt my own skin in... Anyway, let's get going. Jesus Christ, this looks so weird.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No. You didn't do anything wrong. I have skin again. It's not like...
All right. So you guys hired a driverless cab, which about 15 minutes later, not 15 minutes, about 5 minutes later, pulls up in front of the warehouse and whisks you off to Tereslar. At the close border to Tereslar, it basically slows down, finds a really scruffy stuffer shack, pulls over and drops you guys off. And then even though it's driverless, you know, you can tell that it's sort of like, get me out of here, and speeds off.
Even the cars are racist around here.
Deandre shot Afi a text on the way over. Like several of them.
The first couple, you don't get a response. And then what's the content of your text?
It's like, are you awake? Do you mind if I crash in your upstairs room? Scratch, do you mind if me and a horse and that person crash in your upstairs room?
I'm sorry, do you really write horse specifically?
Dinda writes horse.
So like in her head, can I have a horse crash? And she immediately thinks like, wait, like just a horse? Like a centaur? Like, that's too big! And then she thinks about it for a second, she's like, oh, the spirit.
And then Deandre's next text is, no norms this time, promise, with like an emoji afterwards.
The first couple of texts go unanswered, and then finally you get a text back that says, sure. So you've been dropped off at the outskirts of Tereslar, which, as we all know, so you're in Puyallup, which is one of the grimmest areas in Seattle, aside from the Redmond Barrens. Puyallup is it.
Just outside of Tereslar, right?
Right out. You're right on the border of Tereslar. So Tereslar is where elves and other metahumans went after the Night of Rage, and it sort of turned into a permanent slum, and it's also very... It's also very dangerous, especially for non-metahumans and even non-elves. So it's a place that has quite a reputation. It's where most of the ancients, gangers, come from. And it's a scary place. But if you belong there, you can get around quite safely. So thankfully, Deandre does to some extent belong there.
I think Deandre just like turns and starts walking to the border of Tereslar. Like, there's no reason to stop here. Let's go. Safety's right there.
Yeah, you guys have spent enough time in Puyallup recently to know that it's grim. It's really close to the ash flows and lava flows from when Mount Rainier erupted. So the whole place is just covered in a thick layer of ash and soot that has turned into sort of a greasy gray sludge from the rains. And everything is just streaked in ash and soot. There aren't many people about at night, especially, and so... You make quick work heading into Tereslar. Deandre, you immediately are aware that you're going to have to... There are not guards, but because Tereslar is controlled from within and by gangs, there are subtle and not so subtle checkpoints where you're going to have to get through and in.
Yep. I think Deandre basically turns to Boxer and Nightingale and... start speaking in Sporethiel, like there's nothing else better to do.
Are you, what's going on? Why is she talking to us like that?
I think Deandre is saying, like, speak in Sporethiel only. Cover story is, you're my cousin from the tier visiting, and we got into trouble. Not bad trouble, just minor trouble.
Minor trouble, not it.
Something that blows over.
So when you get to the first checkpoint, why don't you describe it for us, Kat?
I think there it's less like the Redmond one, Redmond Barons checkpoints, where they're like barricades and people like standing and ready to ambush you. It's just like three or four ancients standing on the sidewalk or crossing a street every now and again, just waiting for someone to move one way or the other, and they try to stop someone. It's a very informal checkpoint, but there's definitely a lot more than the visible ancients, like, around. There's probably at least six more somewhere.
All right, so they, as you guys are walking up the street, and the street lights are mainly out, there's just one good street light right here that they're conveniently using to locate this checkpoint. Two of the ancients walk out into the street as you're walking up, and one of them holds up his hand. He's got he's wearing black leather biker suit, and he's obviously an elf, as all ancients are. He's quite tall and skinny, and he's got some green mirror shades on, and he's got a green mohawk. Both sides of his head's shaved, and the mohawk's spiked up nicely, and there's a big green symbol, green A, on his, stitched into his leather jacket. And as you approach, he holds up his hand and says, "Hey, chummers, where you think you're going?"
Me and my cousin, we're gonna go see our friend Afy for a bit, down at the laundromat.
Oh, you know Afy?
Yeah, she's a good friend of mine.
Huh, I don't remember having seen you around.
I think D&D like pulls down her like rebreather. It goes, "I've been around enough. I just tend to come in on a bike usually."
He looks over at, when he looks at Boxer, what does he see?
Oh, Boxer's physical mask has her appearing at a normal, typical, of course, through Grace's eyes. So that's probably skewed a little bit towards the particularly like street-like, since she doesn't consume very much media. Elven woman, probably of a kind of muddled ethnicity. She's wearing, I imagine, like poppers, you know, like the little headband with the cat ears, but like a mechanical kind. It looks mechanical, not actually. It's her actual ears. And has this weird furless, hairless balance tail that extends down from her spine. She's wearing Boxer's clothes, maybe slightly changed in color and cut to avoid identification.
All right, and how is Grace appearing?
I imagine Grace just isn't even bothering with her disguise, since she has to maintain that and she's kind of beat up. She has her cloak's collar pulled up, and she's wearing, I forget what kind of clothes she wears, but it's just a pair of trousers and like a little like button-up coat, along with her her cap and her scarf pulled up to cover her snoot. Her eyes are visible, and she's obviously kind of beat. She's not like making any effort to communicate or engage.
The ganger looks you guys up and down, looks at Boxer and says, "Huh, all right, that pet of yours isn't dangerous, is it? Doesn't look dangerous."
"Nope, not in the slightest."
"All right, go on."
"Thanks, Chummer." I think Deandre probably says the like Spirithil equivalent of "thanks, Chummer" to him.
And that'd probably be something like "comrade."
And starts walking
"comrade" off. Informal.
He responds in somewhat accented and broken Spirithil. He's obviously not a native speaker.
I mean, Deandre isn't either. She's just spoken it for 30 years.
All right, so you guys are going to spend the night in Tirislar. Cecile is...
Actually, where is Kirsten going? Is Kirsten going back to Auburn?
Kirsten is going back to Auburn.
Actually, Kirsten, I think I'm going to get some shopping done while I'm in Tacoma.
Says, "I'll go with you."
This really?
This isn't necessarily a safe place to be walking around in the middle of the night.
Okay. I don't know if you'll like the shop, though.
Where do you want to go?
Nibbles and Bites. You would not believe how many praises some of the other people in my information security classes would talk about this shop.
What is it called?
Nibbles and Bites. Nibbles with a Y.
Is Bites also with a Y?
Drop me a pin. We'll head there.
All right. She does so.
As it says, it's a quirky little shop, and it's sort of a combination of tech things and hermetic supplies and lore books. So it's definitely sort of odd. And I guess, you know what? Ronica, give me an edge roll then.
Edge? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess.
Roll. Actually, how many edge dice does Cecile have?
Two.
All right, roll them both. Zero hits. As you pull up to Nibbles and Bites, Cecile, you see that the store is closed.
Ugh.
It is 1:30 in the morning.
Oh, it's that late?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, then. Here, I thought they offered 24/7 service. Oh, well. Kirsten, Cecile turns off her comlink.
Yeah. Doesn't look like we're getting in here tonight unless you want to wait up front.
We have... Cecile has her bags with her, right? Like her stuff?
Yes, she grabbed her stuff when she left Dinger's apartment.
Good, good. Kirsten, I'm going to make a reservation at a Coffin Hotel. I want you to take me there.
Yeah, sure, we can do that. I was going to say you can come back to my place if you want.
Your place is a little cramped, isn't it?
Sure. I mean, it's up to you. It was just...
Don't worry about it, Kirsten.
All right. Yeah, where do you want to go?
Like I said to you, I'm looking for a Coffin Hotel that's bad. Bad, firstly. Specifically cheap, but with a camera looking into the rooms.
I mean, I wouldn't know. I don't think most places aren't going to have a camera in the room.
Or at least a camera positioned such that you can watch the exterior door.
That's guaranteed anywhere. So I've got a couple of spare keys for a Coffin Hotel close by, which is what I gave your chummers. So why don't I just take you there?
I'm going to buy it myself, Kirsten.
All right.
Cecile picks one off a map and tells Kirsten to go to there. How much is that going to run me back for a week?
For a week, let's call it 140.
140. Fair enough.
Do you want any of the amenities? Do you want the 24/7 grid channel?
Zero amenities.
Zero amenities. 140.
If the Wi-Fi costs money, she isn't paying it.
The board clerk says, looks at you and Kirsten and sort of smirks and says, 140.
Yep. So Cecile's going to go in, put her stuff on the bed.
She's going to slide in because it's a Coffin Motel. The door is about 4x4.
Yep. And I would like to hack the camera.
Okay.
Just going to hand wave it, get like 7-ish or something?
Yeah, we can hand wave it. I mean, realistically, you're going to find that there are cameras all over the place here looking at virtually everything.
I'm just going to... 3.
Yeah. The 4. Inside of the Coffin Motel, I mean, it's... This place is located conveniently across from a stuffer shack. There's a little parking lot that is full of old and smaller cars. And imagine just sort of a facade going up with a walkway at each level and stairs going up that are open to the parking lot. So when you go in, you're basically, when you open the door to your Coffin Motel, you're looking out at the parking lot.
Right. I would like to have the camera loop.
Which camera?
Whichever one has a clear view of her door.
Okay. There are several.
All of them.
All right. So you're going to take a period of time and copy it and paste it so that it's just looping that constantly.
Probably a fairly long period of time, like at least an hour.
Okay.
And then once she has that done, she's just going to... Actually, can she leave in some way without the clerk noticing?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. In that case, she's going to leave without the clerk noticing, leaving her stuff there, and she's going to make a reservation at a medium-scale but high-security hotel.
Okay. How much does she want to pay for that?
How much is that going to run me per night?
Depends. You've probably got a range anywhere from around 100 New Yen to 200 New Yen a night.
Her main concern is the security. She wants like a high security rating.
So the more you pay, obviously, the more likely that the security is going to be better.
Yeah. I should say, before she leaves, I do want her to just completely go over everything that she has with her tag eraser. She's going to turn off her comlink, check in at that higher end hotel, and go to sleep. If it's not obvious, she's trying to make sure no one knows where she is, including Kirsten. And I hope I did that successfully.
The seals covered her tracks. Deander, Boxer, and Grace Nightingale have found a a place to stay in Terraslar for the moment. What do you guys want to do next? There are currently you don't have any jobs running except for maybe Boxer. You don't have anything that you have to do right now. This is sort of open for the gang to sort of get some of their own kind of agenda stuff done.
I think maybe after the next day, Dandare starts texting Cecile, like, do you have the footage from the bombing?
Cecile doesn't actually respond. She's keeping her comlink off while she just takes 2 days to just relax.
I think Dandare ends up on the second day sending her a text every 2 hours. So you come back and there's at least 30 of them.
I really just wanted to go into Nibbles and Bites and just have a scene.
All right, let's do that then.
If you all are cool with it, I don't know how long Cecile's going to spend shopping.
All right, so Nibbles and Bites is on 4020 South Street, South Steel Street. And it's described like this. This quirky Seattle shop features both the latest in online equipment alongside a selection of talismans, hermetic supplies, and lore books, particularly in ebook format, but also in hard copy, from their print-on-demand station. Educational classes and workshops are held weekends for all ages, but are particularly popular with youngsters. The owner, Cassandra Van Veek, is a real kick. She gives the impression of a batty old broad, but she's sharp as a monoblade and really knows which end of the wand and an IO port is which. She's been around forever and knows everybody, especially in the Tacoma Awaken and online scene, some of whom still call her Aunt Cassie. So, Veronica, why don't you describe how you imagine Nibbles and Bites appearing from the outside and the inside?
Oh gosh. Okay, if I'm imagining, I'm kind of... Because obviously the idea of, a hermetic store is either, a dusty library or, an antique store, right? Something that's dusty with old books is really what you're looking for. And then if you try... Because in my mind, when I merge that with an electronics store that's luxury, that's an Apple store, right? These two things are kind of, intentionally diametrically opposed. So I kind of imagine that it's, it has the cleanliness or, smooth look of an Apple store, but with dust and weird stuff everywhere that's disorganized, and with, really old books everywhere. No, not old books everywhere, because they're all in ebook format, which means that it probably looks more like an Apple store than a dusty old... I'm sort of reasoning with myself here. It probably looks... No, it's not dusty, because they also hold classes, which means it needs to be at least big enough to have multiple rooms. Okay.
And it is described as quirky, so the decor is probably... The decor is maybe even somewhat ironically referencing the dusty old hermetic supply store, but not dusty.
Yeah, I can kind of see there being okay, so every single magic store, basically the book says, yeah, they do sell stuff to magic people, but most of the time, the stuff that they have out and about is actually aimed at mundane people that are really into magic, quote unquote.
Right. Yep.
So I can only imagine that there's very much traditional orbs and stuff and witch hats and maybe some holo projectors with anime characters, because why the fuck not? And at the same time, all of the actually good stuff, you have to go up to a counter and be hey, can I get some spell formulas and stuff?
Hey, I'm actually magic.
I mean, you have to do that in every magic store, really. Or they just look at you and they go, yep, you passed the sniff test. So I'm imagining it if someone took an electronics shop, right? It was already an electronics store. It has that clean-ish, glossy look. And then they just put wicker things in it and ironic kitscha grandma stuff that you would buy out of a magazine. And orbs, and here's how to tell if your magic books... No, not books. Advertisements for books by a holo projector.
How to unlock your magic potential. A guide.
500 spells to help you find love.
And the spells are just like those modern witchcraft books where it just tells you to do stupid ass shit. Crack an egg on your lover's abdomen and then take that egg and cook it and then feed it to them. They will never leave you.
Yeah. So I'm imagining like an Apple store, except with grandma decor everywhere and holoprojectors of like 500 spells to find true love and 20 spells to help you find success in your life, right?
All right. So you go in one day, you catch a grid guide over there, I imagine.
Oh, and I should also say, I'm imagining that like actually there are like foci like directly alongside like the latest comm links and stuff, right? So you can look at them both at the same time.
Yeah, there's all sorts of electronic gear, foci, talismans, reagents.
Seal immediately goes up to a clerk. Hi, do you have any Fairlight Calibans or Francis Avalons in stock? Or something approximately performing, you know?
The young woman who you've addressed this to is wearing the standard uniform of Tacoma Nibbles and Bites, which is basically just whatever eclectic crap they want to wear on that given day. And she looks at you and she looks you up and down and she says, sure, right this way, miss. And she leads you over to a display case and you see inside the glass, which seems quite thick actually, you see all of the latest models of comlinks that you might want.
Any of them on sale?
She looks at you. On sale?
Never hurts to ask.
No, the prices are as listed.
Mm.
Her nose has elevated itself several inches at this point as she looks at you.
Oh, of course. Show me that one. And she points to the Avalon.
Of course. She pulls it out for you. There you go.
Mm.
It's our latest. It's the latest, obviously.
Good price, too. Do you know what revision this is?
She looks at it. She takes it out of your hand for a moment, flips it over and says, this one just came out.
Ooh, it's very good. Comlink has been feeling sluggish lately.
What are you running? Maybe you just need to clear the cache?
Oh, trust me. You have no idea how many times I clear the cache daily.
Empty the temp file?
Yeah. I even shift around all of the process priorities, custom, looked at event logs, all of that. I've just been doing a lot more high-performance work lately, and it isn't cutting it. Actually, here, let me show you. It's an Erica Elite.
Will you be trading this in?
Maybe. How much would I get for it?
I could probably give you 15% of the new value.
That's not terrible. Better than I'd get in most other shops.
That is, of course, pending a full test.
Oh, don't worry. I keep it in great shape.
She smiles. It does look good, I have to admit, for an older model.
Actually, do you have just the pure parts for a Transis Avalon?
Parts? Well, sure. I mean, if you want to hack something together, we do supply kits.
Yeah, I've been thinking about putting something together myself. You know what? Let me think about it. Do you have anything, spells to help my skin? I've been feeling under the weather lately.
Spells to help your skin. Well, you know what? Why don't you talk to Cassie? She's over there by the register. She's the one knitting.
Ah, okay. Thank you.
Of course. And if you want to pick up the comlink, just get back in touch with me.
Absolutely.
We do work on commission. So you go over to the counter, I take it.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
The older woman that the clerk had referred to you to is sitting in what appears to be a big overstuffed chair knitting. She's wearing a floral pattern frock, and he's peering at the knitting through some very large and old-fashioned looking glasses that appear to have like real glass lenses in them that are tinted purple, of all things. and her hair is a golden orange color, but you see that she hasn't renewed her dye job, so there's about an inch of gray root showing.
Mm.
And as you walk up, she looks up at you and smiles and says, "Yes, dear, what can I help you with?"
"Oh, I was looking to get some spell formula, but I didn't know exactly what you had in store."
"Ah, we have pretty much anything you could be looking for."
"Anything, you say?" Now I have to make actually tough choices here. I'm not going to find that spell here. Yes. Okay. Let me do some maths quickly. This is just me. Actually, you know what? I don't care about price right now. Let me just buy the formula that I want. I'm looking for a bunch of stuff right now, actually. Right now I'm mainly focused on something to help me look a bit better. I've always looked kind of sickly, you know?
Okay.
So I was hoping you could help me find a spell to help me with that healthy glow from street magic.
It'd be purely role-playing.
Let me pull up the exact text. "This spell brightens eyes and hair, sloughs off dead skin cells, improves circulation, and promotes general well-being. A cosmetic spell, Healthy Glow is popular with the rich as a status symbol and pick-me-up. Though permanent in the sense that it does not require sustaining, the effects of the spell do wear off over time, based on the subject's lifestyle, diet, vices, and such. The hits achieved determine how well the target is cleaned up."
What is it called again?
"Healthy Glow, page 169, Street Magic."
All right, so let's make sure that we're not messing up any rules. How do you formulate costs for the spells?
That is in the core rulebook in the magic section. Each has its own specific cost, but I can just chummer where it lists formula. Health formula is 500 million 4R. Wow. Health formulas are cheap.
So, Cassie basically says, "Yeah, I mean, we've got all sorts of variations of that. It's a fairly common spell."
"Ooh, that's lovely. Could you actually... One of my friends got hurt recently, and I was annoyed that I couldn't help them. Do you have healing spells here?"
"Of course. Another very popular spell."
"Okay. What about something to detect people? Like, know everything that's in an area?"
Yeah, more than likely. If it's not, you know that you're going to need the... You're fully licensed, right?"
"Oh, absolutely. I'm sorry, am I not broadcasting that right now?"
"I just wanted to make sure. Every now and then we do have some problems with that."
"Ugh, no, don't worry. I'm studying down at the University of Washington. I can't imagine people practicing magic without a license. Gives all of us a bad name."
"Don't you guys have a... You guys have a pretty extensive library down there that you can access?"
"Oh, yeah, the Blue Moon and also the university's library, but I felt like coming down here since I also need to upgrade my comlink. And, you know, sometimes you have something neat."
"I've heard you get a pretty good discount."
"Yeah, unfortunately, stuff's been happening at the campus and I don't want to be seen there for a while. Drama."
"I see, of course." The whole time you guys have been talking, she's just sort of madly knitting away. Her fingers seem to have a mind of their own as you just sort of watch this shawl taking shape.
"Now, this is one that I might actually have to ask you. I don't know if I'll have to sign a form or something, but I'm looking to, how do you say, I'm trying to find the right euphemism here, both out of character and in character. Perhaps defend myself by making sure the people around me can't harm me? Like a puppet on strings."
She sort of gives you a look. "Huh. Well, we do sell combat spells, but there are some things that we don't really traffic in."
I understand. It's not so much a combat spell, I would say."
"No, I guess what I was trying to say is that we will sell you a combat spell, but not necessarily that type of spell."
Fair enough.
"One has one standards, of course."
"I understand. In that case..."
You get the impression she's liking you less.
"Don't give me that look. You know how dangerous the streets are these days?"
Her needles stop for a full half second before they start going again, and she just shrugs.
I have a feeling I'm not going to be paying the listed price.
Oh, God, that seems exactly like a corporation to, like, let their reps mark the price up if they don't like someone and just be like, oh, yeah, there was this fee that I didn't account for.
I'm also going to ask about shape change. I was asking about mob control, if that wasn't obvious. Also get a formula for increase attribute logic and charisma.
All right. Well, you're, I guess, just go ahead and put together the list.
Mm-hmm. I'm just getting it sorted in my head.
They're going to have most of what you want, except for they're not going to just, they'll sell you combat spells and things like that, but they won't sell you anything that's potentially ethically questionable.
Yeah, that's fair. I had to give it a shot.
I think after laying low a few days, Dinder would probably...
You haven't gotten a response back from Cecile.
I think she'd bug Nightingale to put a physical mask on her and then go to Olga's. Or to bug Nightingale to attempt to put a physical mask.
Nightingale would have recovered by then, so I guess she'd be able to do it. But, like, she'd probably say, hey, by the way, I can't guarantee you that I'll hold this the entire time you're there, depending upon how long you're out. So just tell me when you're coming back so that I can, you know, it's kind of a thing.
Sounds good. I think, is it too risky to try to go pick my bike?
Where did you leave it? Was it at your place in Auburn?
Okay. Because I walked to the clinic.
That's right. Well, I mean, you have to decide that on your own. Are any of you, like, watching, keeping an eye on the news or anything like that?
Cecile always is.
Deandre, having nothing better to do, would probably... put it on, like, in the background.
Yeah, because
maybe
so...
every once in a while, she'd switch over to Karasir News and listen to them talk in Sparathiel and switch back.
Anybody who's keeping any kind of eye on the news is seeing that the hunt for the perpetrators of the bombing of the bar in Auburn is still in full swing, and there are no new leads. There are minor firefights and scuffles being reported. Also, all of you are seeing that the mayor's office and Knight Errant are proudly proclaiming how they are cleaning up the streets. They're showing metahumans being let out in groups from downtown Auburn. And supposedly these are all sinless people who weren't supposed to be living there or were squatting, and they're cleaning up the neighborhood. And then at some point you all see another blurb of Diana Petrov talking about her foundation to clean up Auburn and how they're going to bring new investment to Auburn and develop new housing. And it's laden, as it always is, with the various subtle racist dog whistles that she's been using. So you see that in Auburn, you know, that whole neighborhood where Boxer and where Deander have been living and where Kaylee's clinic is, they've been methodically taking away all of the clean, you know, basically getting rid of all of the street vendors. They're all being rounded up. You don't know where they're being taken, but you see it on the Trids casts, along with all of the officials from Knight Errant and Auburn and the Seattle mayor's office all congratulating themselves on, you know, making Auburn safer and cracking down on crime and terrorism and the sinless.
I think every time they kind of get to this point in the thing, Deandre, like, storms out of the room what the news is going on and, like, comes back in 15 minutes later. Like, she's getting exceptionally angry with this.
So this is, like, in the safe house, right? Nightingale, like, after Deandre has, like, stormed out for the first time, I imagine she, like, had her grimoire out and she was sat down next to Boxer, or at least where Boxer was sitting. She just asks to the room, but why are they doing? I don't really understand why they do all of this work to make people suffer.
Because those people, to them, they shouldn't be allowed to have anything, really. That we exist at all is frankly an affront to them, but to exist as anything above animals, that's even worse.
I think Dinder is in like just next room and comes like marching back in, fuming basically, and is like starts shouting in Sparathiel for a second before she realizes, and then like calms down.
Heimdall flinches.
They're doing it again. Again. Why every single time? Gentrification. That's what it's called. Or what people used to call it. The rich basically find an area of town where humanists, because they did this last time too. They find a section of town where the rent is low, everyone is living their lives. They stir up trouble to get them kicked out. Especially everyone who's not a Kelic. And then Deandre offers, you've heard Deandre, like, say elf slurs for norms before, but, like, this is the most awful word you've ever heard come out of your mouth. It's, like, 14 words long, and it has, like, a poetic meter to it as well. Oh, it's, like, internally referencing itself in when you're, like, listening to it in Sparathiel. It's the most composed insult you've ever heard someone utter. It would literally be like a paragraph if you were to write down in English with all of the different things that are said.
The elf responds to the human 14 words.
That was the most poetic shit I've ever heard, but holy shit.
I don't think I can stand for it this time. I think
was there
just
something you could do last time?
I left last time.
Well, is there something we can do this time?
Maybe getting people out might be the best idea.
Out? You want us to just leave?
I want the people who can't fight. The people who are... God damn it. Deandre says a word in Sparathiel again. It's basically like the common term for Dizikli and people who like are unable to wield their own blade.
The weak, the old, the young. Like
the
all
three,
of that, but
the
in
three
a
of
trip.
You who are having this conversation could make a memory test.
I love memory tests. Wow.
Boxer Sparathiel is getting much better.
Boxer is getting much better at Sparathiel.
Those online courses are paying off.
Ollie, I guess you guys aren't in the shadow situation right now, so we'll call her Ollie. Ollie and Deandre,
or Cien, if we're using real names.
Ollie and Cien are talking this through, and as Cien is giving this sort of angry monologue about how she wants things to be different this time and is being questioned on what they can do, the two of you are thinking, is there some way that we can expose this? Is there some leverage that we have? How do we expose this? Because while Cien wants to fight, and Ollie probably doesn't mind fighting either, you know, it's sort of a literally fighting is going to be a difficult thing to do effectively in this kind of a situation where the full might of knight errant is on the street. Grace, who's sitting there listening to this, trying to comprehend what's going on, is sort of in the background, you know, maybe less conflicted by emotion and looking at things a little bit more analytically, is thinking that they might have some of the pieces of the puzzle already. Some of the information that the words and names that she's heard in the past couple of hours, you know, 24 hours or 48 hours, is that they're connected, that this Diana Petrov, who's been talking on the TV, who's also the enemy of Kaylee and Prokop, and if she's connected to this and you have some kind of leverage over her, could you use it?
So, wait, to clarify, you're saying we have shit on Diana.
Well, you've heard that you do, and you've heard that you know that Diana Petrov is the wife of Kirill Petrov, and you know that you did that run against Warehouse Alliance in which you uncovered all sorts of nasty stuff. You know, you might have some information weapons that you can use against these people. I mean, if you could find a link between Diana Petrov and all of the bad things that have happened in Auburn, and I'm not talking about the rounding up of Meadows, but the Humanus influence and the bombing. If there was some way to connect that to Diana Petrov, and by extension, Kirill Petrov and Diana's foundation for the revitalization of Auburn, if you could find these kind of links, you'd have an effective tool.
She stands up and she clears her throat, like stepping off of the couch and then onto the coffee table. And she says, "You too. I know that you're stressed out. I know that this is scary, but we already have dirt on Diana Petrov, and she's a politician. She has to be popular and has to look good. We have some pretty serious, excuse my spirethial, but dreck. I mean, it's a saying. Don't look at me like that."
It's tet in spirethial.
She huffs to continue. We have dirt on her. We have dirt on Kirill Petrov. We have dirt on them both. And we know by circumstance that they are involved in the situation going on in Auburn. They're connected to Humanus. They're connected to the bombing. They have killed people. If we can find a latchkey, if we can connect it all together and make it a single cohesive narrative, we could destroy their careers, corporate and political, in one fell swoop by getting it to the press and sharing it with powerful people otherwise. What?
So what you're telling me is we need a damn bar footage. The bar footage that I asked Cecile to pull. She did, apparently.
We need more than just that, though. That would get their stooges. They wouldn't set a foot in there themselves.
They're stooges who will link them. We don't need a link.
We need those. We either need some information surrounding them, or we need them to talk.
At this point, I think it would be interesting if Cecile looked at her comlink and found all the messages.
She's probably turned it on.
Yeah, and when she turns it on, there's just that.
Yeah, I was about to say, I imagine it's not going to be reasonable where it just says, "You have this many lost, missed messages." It's going to, like, send each one as though it was, like, stowed waiting for you to turn it on.
About two-thirds of the messages are in Spratheel.
I'm sorry, I need to handle something quickly. One of my friends has some kind of very important emergency. She kind of walks off, like, 2 feet. Checks back. "What is it you need, Deandre?"
This is not an opportune moment for either of them to be pissy with each other. So I think Deandre calls Cecile.
Cecile picks up.
And Deandre is not, like, screaming, but you can really tell that Deandre has lost her. You have the footage, right?
Yeah.
Where is it?
On my comlink.
Will you send it to me?
Sure, I'll make a backup, too.
Thank you.
Great.
Wait, footage of what?
For the record, I got some good shots of all of you, too.
Perfect.
What did you put exactly?
Cecile's gonna send over the bar footage. All of it. In its probably several petabyte glory.
Yep.
The bombing.
And she's also gonna put it on her online unlimited storage from her MSP as a backup. Alongside backing up her entire comlink to her MSP storage. Okay. She turns back to the clerk. "Sorry about that. How about I buy 5,000 worth of formulas? Does that sound good?"
"Of course. We're always happy to help."
Veronica,
just make the purchase. Decide what you want to buy.
"Yes, that's everything."
All right, so you've got the file of the footage.
"If we can just confirm the person who planted the bomb wasn't a metahuman, that can be used to slow the roll on Knight Errant, because then that would make it obvious that the bombing was a false flag and that Metahuman Front is not representative of the community."
"We need more than that if we're trying to turn public opinion."
But also there are people that are currently being rounded up. There are people that are currently suffering.
Ollie remembers what Vic told her, that the local precinct in Auburn, Knight Errant precinct, in his opinion, had been infiltrated and or just outright bought or co-opted, because he and his people that he trusted had been sent off to work in Tacoma for the week or whatever it was, so that they weren't there to be involved. And he's told Boxer before that he thinks that there are some elements within the local knight errant force that are either corrupt or otherwise have some kind of agenda going.
Talking about that, there's one thing I don't get. Why did an orc come to the apartment? It was an orc officer. He came. It was a magically active orc officer.
Do you
even if he
his...
was with them, why would they send a lone magician?
Do you remember his rank badge?
Memory test question mark.
Would Grace even know what a rank badge would be?
I imagine she'd probably be able to distinguish between like military officer, NCO, and enlisted ranks. I don't know how Knight Errant works though.
Knight Errant's basically a private military group.
All right, make another memory test.
She may not know exactly what it was, but
you could describe what it looked like.
He was, yeah. In Grace's memory of the orc, he was very young looking, and his uniform seemed very new and lacking in distinguishing features, so probably not highly ranked.
He was a cadet.
Cadet mage on his own came to Ollie's apartment.
And an orc, when if all of this was happening, it doesn't make sense. He wasn't with the same cops that are rounding up the Sinless and the Metis in town. Why was he there?
They didn't have anyone below a lieutenant in the squad that cleaned up Auburn after the bombing. I think it might be unrelated. I know saying that's like, let's ignore it, but I'm not...
Shadow, the George Van Housen, right? I know that that's
he
like
was training recruits.
That's a distinct strain in the department, and I don't think that George Van Housen, as a trainer, would have... Well, he wasn't even alive then. He would have left behind trainees who, if not, they literally knew who he was and what he'd done, probably shared his hatred of Shadowrunners.
You also remember that George Van Housen, your initial contact with George Van Housen was that he came to talk to you because you were looking for Kimmy, right? And he basically came to talk to you and say, hey, look, these cadets are under my protection and I don't want you messing them. So he had his relationship with his cadets was probably such that it instilled loyalty from them because he was there protecting them.
Kimmy was a part of his class, and presumably there were others. I think we need to try and reach out to Kimmy again, somehow. Oh my goodness, I killed...
Anigil kind of locks up as that.
You killed in self-defense. They were going to hurt you. And I don't know. Look, I have footage of what happened to George Schoenhauser.
Diender can make another memory test, too. Actually, both Diender and Ollie can make a memory test. Diender remembers that as they were evacuating the hospital with Kaylee, and this is probably why Boxer does not remember, because she was carrying Kaylee, and you were exchanging fire with a group of knight errant team that came up. You, now that you're thinking about it and following up on the words that Grace is telling you, a distinct pattern emerges of that team that came up after you in the hospital. They were probably, they acted like newbies. They might have been trainees too.
So maybe they were connected to the hospital assault because they're similar rank, trainees at least.
Which means they weren't coming after Metas. They were coming after us.
Oh, yes, that's great. So something about behind the stuffer shack. I don't know, we'll...
But we have a mutual enemy now because they were multiracial, right? And they probably think that we killed their boss, their trainer.
And I have a recording that says otherwise.
I think Dinder like starts to laugh.
He just starts anime laughing.
Yeah, like at the we have a mutual enemy now thing. And like after a few seconds, she's like, "Cops don't rat on other cops. I didn't for the longest time."
Well, you see, it's different. Whenever the other cops want you dead because the shape of your face and the fact you have tusks, is it not?
The other cops?
We had a few zealot cops in the peace regiment. They never got promoted, but I don't think I would have routed any of them out, even if they were shooting people on the street.
Nightingale just gives him a look.
Of course, these are cadets. They might still have... They probably don't have that instilled in them yet.
I mean...
They're probably still feeling super altruistic and gung-ho to save the world.
Yeah, because think of them like privates, not even out of basic yet. They're not cynical yet. And they haven't been broken in by the culture quite as hard as they will be in the coming months and years.
Realize that's a bit of meta, but you know.
No, but that's a fair
point. Gindler would probably know that.
Would think of.
That's something that both Boxer and Deandre would know. Hell, maybe even Grace. Depends on how much she remembers from... Is that even canon?
Okay. So, has the Meta Front released a statement on the bombing at all?
There was a video the very night that the thing happened, right after it happened, there was a video released that showed the Metahuman Front, that showed several Metahuman Front operatives in front of a big banner giving a statement of responsibility for the attack.
But there.
And you can find that online anytime, anywhere you want. That's readily available at this point.
Might be, probably won't work to find the actual Metahuman Front people. Try to get them to turn around such a statement. No one really listens to facts anyways.
Well, those people are probably paid actors.
It's a good story. Clean. It's easy.
Mm-hmm. So if we... They don't have to do anything else after that. And in fact, they probably have enough Noonian that they could just pick up and leave now.
They probably did.
If we could reach out to them.
To be honest, I think that was recorded halfway across the country.
Did the Metahuman Front exist before this?
Yeah, the Metahuman Front is a metahuman rights organization that's been active in Seattle for quite a while. Deander is probably quite familiar with it.
Card carrying member, or what passes as an old Metahuman Front card.
They do security for like rallies and stuff. They haven't previously been known for, you know, any kind of offensive violence. They've obviously been defensive in nature, defending people who are protesting and rallying and things like that. And they're more of a community-based organization.
Despite the fact that that doesn't fit their MO to racists, it makes perfect sense because they're already scared of them.
Or wage slaves.
Yeah, because they're a progressive militia, and corporations, whatever they feel about it, they don't want the people to have that kind of power. Evo might be the only one that is even vaguely, like, ambivalent towards their existence.
I think the best way is to probably find who planted the bomb and maybe try to get at them. Unless you guys have a better idea for a linchpin.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. Finding the person who planted the bomb, connecting Diana to them.
We need to connect Humanus and Diana to the bombing.
Yes. We also need to connect Diana to Humanus, which I guess that just comes naturally.
Don't we have a connection for Diana to Humanus?
Not officially. She's the moderate wing of whatever this is, however you describe it.
She's the middle Republican that's like, yeah, let's have a coalition with the Nazis.
Who's this? Who's the coalition lady?
Diana.
Oh, you think she's the middle?
No, she's the Republican who pretends to be in the middle, but is actually a Nazi.
Oh, okay, yes.
We just need to find concrete link between her and Humanus.
Which, talking about that, what happened to the parties in Shadowrun? I know the Dims and Reps still exist, but what is their political alignment like?
We're in Seattle. It's a city-state. We're not in UCAS.
It's a city-state, and your current mayor is...
Well, actually, that's not true. Seattle is a part of UCAS.
Is it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes-n't.
Yes-n't.
It's kind of like it is a part of UCAS, but it also has a great deal of personal autonomy. So it is a city-state, but it is a city-state within UCAS, but has a greater level of autonomy than you would expect from other regions. But in Shadowrun 5e, it does become a fully autonomous region, from what I recall. Let me fact check that.
Seattle politics. Currently, Seattle's mayor is Kenneth Brackhaven.
Party, or are they all independent?
I think they're independent. So his party is Safety and Security for Seattle.
Oh, is it like the New York Working Families Party, kind of deal, except they actually have power?
Yeah, it's a mixed. So his stated priorities were Metroplex security, the economy, and reducing crime. Kenneth Brackhaven's the mayor who fired Lone Star and hired Knight Errant.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is every district has its own mayor. So there's a mayor, you know, Brackhaven is the mayor over all of Seattle. And then each of like Auburn and Tacoma and Puyallup, they all have their own mayors.
Mm.
Yeah, absolutely. UCAS laws still apply in Seattle.
Yeah, I don't know how we forgot what country we were in.
This is 2072.
Part of the reason why Cecile moved here, since it is within the UCAS still.
Speaking of Cecile, as the other three party members are having this intense discussion and revelations, Cecile is sort of, you know, just doing her own thing, buying spell formula. Anything else?
Yes. Hi. She goes back to that other clip. Hi. I've decided that I am going to get that stuff for the Transis Avalon in parts only. Do you also have that, it's a thing that recently came out, a Zeiss miniaturized trade projector? Holo trade projector?
Yeah, I think we do. Just a moment. Let me go back. I don't have them out here. I'm going to have to go back. I'll be right back. And she heads off. A couple of minutes later, she comes back with two boxes and their kits that are assembled by the team here. And there's a full set of instructions and tools. And if you want to buy any other accessories, just let me know.
Do you have anything for EMP hardening?
Of course. Would you like a specific case?
No, I'm going to design one myself.
Okay, well, we do have some flexible Faraday-type components that you can add.
That would be lovely. Okay, so that's going to put me back up.
I do think that if we can finish the Kaylee going public about her family, that will get us our connection fully done, as if we can find the first part of it.
I'm going to metagame a little and say that Cecile is actually now against Kaylee going public.
Dandre's going to have to arm Cecile.
I really liked that setup. I really enjoyed watching that come together.
Oh, also, Dandre still does want to go and make sure that the fan club is staying out of danger, but in like a covert ops way, I guess.
The Topps Company, Inc. has sole ownership of the names, logo, artwork, marks, photographs, sounds, audio, video, and or any proprietary material used in connection with the game Shadowrun. The Topps Company, Inc. has granted permission to the Hard Knock Sorority Podcast to use such names, logos, artwork, marks, and or any proprietary materials for promotional and informational purposes on its website, but does not endorse and is not affiliated with the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast in any official capacity whatsoever. The music for the Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast was written and performed by Trace Mineral. The Hard Knocks Sorority Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons License 4.0, meaning you are welcome to use the material as long as you give us credit.
Don't face. Holly the boxer with a cyber edge. Claws cut deep, she walks the razor's ledge. Her from Equestria, tough yet kind. Facing a world that's so unrefined. Dinner searches a path of pain. Above a shadow in the icy rain. Procrastinate revenge.